Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 10 is on its way, and this one is entitled, I Love You. And that is the witty banter between Princess Leia and Han Solo in Star Wars, episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, as well as the reverse banter in Star Wars, episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Han then says, I love you, and Leia says, I know. So that's where the title's coming from. And the reason is because I am so excited, because I am hosting the Brant, as always. But with me this time is not Brian Raddatz, but instead...
This is Kathy Sanderson, Brant's wife.
Yes, and Kathy is hosting with me today. So welcome, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast. This is a product of the Time Machine and the Portal, which is a store, or two stores, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. So we are here, and we're going to talk about games and things related to the store, and all sorts of stuff. So glad that you joined us today. So, let's see. Oh, one thing, if you're listening to this and you're saying, wait a second, I listened to episode 8 and now this is episode 10. Yes, we recorded episode 9, but we're having some technical difficulties. We still have the files, but we haven't put it all together. So we're going to still call this 10, then we'll go back, we'll produce 9, we'll get that out to you as well, recorded a little while ago. So this is still episode 10, even though it's the 9th one coming out. Don't be too confused there. All right, Kath, so recently we hosted at our house BrantCon, the first annual one, BrantCon 2015. So how do you think it went?
I think that it went pretty well, considering it was Halloween weekend, and it was our first attempt. What did we have, like 80 people coming through our house over the weekend? And lots of games played.
Yeah, it was 4 days and 80 people and 50 plus games that were played over those 4 days. So I thought it was pretty good. So Gen Con says that it's the best 4 days in gaming. So we called BrantCon the best 97 hours in gaming because it was 4 days and 1 hour because it was on the fall back weekend with daylight saving. So we got the extra hour in there for gaming. So what else? What else did you think about BrantCon?
Well, I was deathly ill through most of it, but I really enjoyed learning some new games and getting to hang out with people that I don't usually play games with and get to play with them.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had people from traveling all sorts of places to come play games with us, and Thursday night was kind of like a gamer's night. There's a lot of people. We were playing longer games, a little more strategic. Friday night was kind of like the party night. There was a lot of people, you know, parents that got babysitters for their kids and came. And I did a big Wits and Wagers game with, I don't know, 30 people, which was really exciting. So that was fun to host. It was Halloween themed. Saturday, we had like kids' days. We had a lot of kids and kids' activities. A bunch of people came. And Sunday was the light day. Not as many people, but got to play a bunch more games. So that was really fun. So
yeah.
We'll hope to do it again. All right, we're going to talk about some upcoming events at the store here. So there's one major event, which is on December 18th. Yes, that's the same day that Star Wars Episode 7 releases. But I'm sure that most of you will go to the midnight show or go in the afternoon. And then that night we're going to have a Christmas party at the Portal. This is our holiday party that we do annually every year. There's pizza, there's raffle prizes, all sorts of different things. F&M is happening as normal, Friday Night Magic, as well as some miniatures tournaments and some other card game tournaments and things. Everybody that comes out and is involved in one of those things will get a raffle ticket. And there'll just be lots of fun stuff going on and lots of events. So definitely something to check out. F&M starts at 7 p.m. All the other festivities are just be going on when people get there and whatnot. So definitely make your way down there on December 18th after you see Star Wars Episode 7 come and discuss that with everybody and just have a good time. So should be a lot of fun. It's a fun place to play. Big space. New England's premier tabletop destination. So, really good. You can always look for more upcoming events on our website, www.timemachineportal.com, as well as friend us on Facebook. You could just friend us. We're just The Portal. So just go there, and you can find all the upcoming releases and events and all sorts of things. There's tournaments, Force of Will. We're now a Force of Will location. We've got all the Magic tournaments. We've got X-Wing, Star Wars Armada, Warhammer 40K, all the things that Kathy loves, right?
Right.
Kathy doesn't play a lot of that stuff. So there's that. Awesome. Okay. So let's go to the What's on Your Table segment of the podcast. So Kathy and I are going to talk about three games that we have specifically played together. So we picked out three that we thought people would really be interested in. So the first one is probably the juiciest, the most exciting, the newest one here, which is Seven Wonders Duel. Okay, so no, if you played Seven Wonders, you're not hearing wrong. This is Seven Wonders Duel. So it's the two-player version of... Seven Wonders, which is a drafting game that can play up to seven people, but this is a drafting game that they specifically made for two people. The one in the original version, that two-player wasn't so good, so they made a two-player version. So this is produced by Repos and Asmodee. They're the ones that that published this game. So what happens in Seven Wonders Duel is you go through the three ages, and you draft cards. You kind of set out cards in a pyramid format, and some cards are face up and some are face down, and as you draft cards, more cards become available and they get flipped face up, so you're not sure what you're uncovering for your opponent. And you go through three different ages. At the beginning you each draft four different wonders, but the trick is only seven of those wonders can be built. So one person can build all four and one person can build three. So then you go through three ages of drafting all of those. And the winner is the person who has the most points. So you've got buildings that score points. Your wonders can score you points. You can score points for science and military and various other ways. There's also alternate victories that can happen before the end of the game. If a person accrues so many different scientific technologies, they will win. There's a military track. It's kind of a push-pull thing. If I gain military, I move towards Kathy. If she gains military, it pushes back towards me. And if you get to your opponent's end of that track, you immediately win the game. So we've played this twice now, Kat?
Twice.
We've played it twice, and I think it's a good game. What do you think about Seven Wonders Duel?
I like it a lot. I wasn't sure the first time. I actually felt like I was just getting the raw end of the deal through the whole game, and then was very surprised that it ended in completely a tie, which was quite bizarre. So the second game I definitely liked better. I had a better feel of how it was gonna go. I like it.
Yeah, it's a good game. I think what happened in the first game was I had some cards that were very attacky. It was like destroy your opponent's resource and destroy this and some other things. The wonders that seem powerful to me are the ones that have like take another turn after this. Because, you know, not just, oh, you get to take two turns, one is build the wonder, but it's you get two cards. No matter what you do, if you build a wonder, you draft a card. You can draft a card and get money for it. You can just straight up take a card and put it in your tableau to score points or get you money or upgrade a technology, whatever it is. There's all sorts of different colors for different things. So I think what was happening was some of those cards were very like attack, 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 which you don't see as much in other games, but in a two-player game, you need more of that kind of back and forth.
Yes.
Nice. So yeah, it's definitely a great game. I know one of my favorite two-player games is Patchwork, the Uwe Rosenberg game. Do you like that one?
I do like that one.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at that one, so it's not my favorite.
Yeah. This game is definitely kind of up there with one of my, with that one in terms of, which one I like better. I think we need to play it more. The second time I believe I won on science, and the tricky part with the science is it becomes very manipulative. I don't know what the term is in terms of like, you can see the cards, or they could be in the face down, and you're going for that last one, and you can kind of force your opponent's hand in, like, you will reveal that for me, or you will give me that card, and it seems like you can kind of force that on the other person. So it's interesting there. So I think it'll take a few more plays to solidify it, but it's definitely very fun, definitely enjoyable. What do you think about the replayability on Seven Wonders Duel? Does it feel replayable?
It definitely does, because the cards, you don't use every single card in each deck, each age, and they always come out differently, certainly, and the change of the wonders in the beginning will definitely change how the game is played every time.
Nice. All right, next up, I know Kathy's excited to talk about this one. This is Mysterium from Asmodee. And so what happens in Mysterium is, and we conveniently played this on Halloween, but this game takes place on Halloween night, and you go to a haunted mansion, and some years past, there was a murder at the mansion. And this is the one night that you as psychics or whatever you are can convene with the dead and try to find out what happened and how this person was murdered. So one person plays the ghost, which is the person that was killed in the house, and they are trying to convey to all the other players, which there can be six more, so you can play with seven people in this game. They're trying to convey to them, you know, clue style, the person, the location, and the murder weapon, which happened. The location are various rooms in the house, a la Clue. But the trick is they can't talk at all, so they have to convey all this information by simply passing cards. And if you ever played Dixit, that party game, you have cards that are very like Dixit. They're very abstract looking paintings, very neatly done. And so the ghost will hand out these cards to people, anywhere from one to seven cards, trying to convey, like, that is the doctor, by passing things that have doctor looking things, people that are sick, or medicine looking things, or I don't know what else. Stethoscope. I don't know. Whatever you can find on the card to try to convey doctor to other people. And you have a certain number. I think you have like 7 hours to figure out your person, to figure out your location, figure out your weapon. And then there's a final round where you try to determine of all those candidates, which one was the final person. That's a very broad overview of the game. But kind of a party style game with very unique type thinking. But I know Kathy loves Mysterium. So tell us what you like about Mysterium.
I do. This is one of my favorite games right now. And I love being the ghost. I don't know what I like about it. I like trying to communicate through these abstract cards. Although it can be very frustrating when you hand out a card and somebody starts to get it right and then is led down the wrong path. 'Cause you have to listen to the conversation around the whole time without saying anything. But yeah, I do. I think it's very fun. I can see how even playing it the few times that we have, how it would be hard to play it again and again and again, because you start to get used to the cards and you get ideas in your head from previous games, like, oh, that card meant the doctor in that game, so it must be the doctor even if you meant it for something else. So
yeah, you're kind of metagaming at that point. Your group is forming, like, this card represents this, this card represents that, and even as you add and subtract players, there's still somebody who's like, oh, well, that means this.
Right, yeah.
We had that with the facial hair. Like, oh, these people all have facial hair, and so facial hair is now a thing. Like, whenever I want to convey facial hair, I could do that through certain characters, which I jumped in a game after you guys had played, like, one or two, and that was already a thing, and I was like, oh, okay, that's a thing. I didn't know that was a thing. So it's kind of interesting in that sense. Yeah, one element they added, so this game actually came out in Poland and some other places first, and then came out in America, and they've changed up a couple things. But you have these little tokens where you can kind of, like, bid or guess if people are right or wrong. And I've heard a lot of other podcasts and reviewers and people saying how they don't like that element because it's weird, like we're working cooperatively, but then I'm saying, no, you're wrong, and he's right, and blah, 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 blah. But I feel like people have gotten those tokens wrong. Like, the point isn't to use those to, like, vote on somebody's, whether you think they're right or wrong. They're more hedging your bet. Like, well, I'm not too sure, so if I'm right, great, because I progress, and that helps the group. But if I'm wrong, people put some wrong tokens here, and then we'll move up. What happens is you have to move up along this little score track, and it determines how many cards you get to see in the last round. So the ghost will pick three cards, but certain people will only get to see one, two, or all three of those cards based on how far up this track they move. So using those little tokens lets you kind of hedge your bet and say, well, I'm not really sure on this. Or, okay, this is the fourth time I'm guessing. I must have it right. People can lay those tokens down and score points. So I like those tokens. I think they add a little part of the game. Now, I could see if groups were using them kind of contentiously. I don't think that would be very fun. What do you think about those little tokens that are in the game?
Right. I think they make plenty of sense. The first game we played, we were actually doing it wrong, and people would even put the negative ones on their own guess that they had made because they totally weren't sure about it. So we definitely used those, at least in the right spirit of it, the first game. But after that, once we learned the rule, but we certainly... Yeah, we definitely didn't use them in question of another player's judgment. More of, as a group, we just weren't sure.
Yeah.
Or we had differing opinions.
Yeah.
So I think they make sense.
Yeah, all the groups I played with were very group-friendly. Like, everybody's working on everybody's card, and there wasn't really an alpha player. Like, it was never like, you know, the person got the ultimate decision on what they thought. Like, well, we think it's one of these two, and, you know, you can pick. And nobody was ever like, no, you're so wrong. Like,
right.
There were times, but it was just kind of the fun banter back and forth. So, yeah, I really like Mysterium. We tried it with Dixit cards one time. Were you the ghost that time?
I was.
And we found that was tricky because, sadly, in Dixit, there aren't enough sad cards, death cards, unhappy cards to get those weapons across to people. So what was your frustration level there?
Yeah, that was very difficult, trying to convey a gun with clouds and balloons. And
two dancing teddy bears.
Yes. Yeah, that I found that to be very difficult. But again, as the game starts to lose its replayability, I can definitely see reintroducing the Dixit cards just to give it more challenge, and because there are tons of those cards. So
yeah, so that's Mysterium, Asmodee. I know when it was around last year, just kind of whispers about this game, tons of people were talking about it, it was great, and then it came out big at Gen Con. We saw the booth and everything where they were playing with people. And then kind of as people started seeing it, they were like, oh, they weren't as big on it. It kind of got a little bit of negative buzz. But now that I've played it, I just think it's great. I mean, it's not highly strategic. It's just a fun game to sit around with seven people. Kind of party style, but, you know, like people that are slight gamers will enjoy it. So definitely check that one out, Mysterium. All right, the last game we're going to talk about is an old one, but one that we love to play. And this is Star Wars, the Living Card Game. So I obviously got into this because I just love everything Star Wars. And so I picked this game up right pretty much from the beginning and did some tournaments and various things at the store. And used to run the LCG night at the store and had people come and play. So I was having a lot of fun with that. But then it kind of sat in the back burner for like a year. And recently I've been taking it out and just going, you know, that game's really fun. And so I put some casual decks together. I wasn't worried about making the top tier tournament deck. This will smash your face, but you have no idea what these cards are. You've never heard of them in the Star Wars universe. And I started making decks that were just, hey, this is Han and Chewie and the Falcon and Lando, and they're all in one deck. All your favorites, you know? All the characters you recognize. So it's just fun to flip those cards and play. And I've been playing this with a bunch of people again. We've played it for years, pretty much since the start. And I just think it's a great game. It really is, even as a casual game. So what's your feeling been on Star Wars LCG, having played it like 4 years running?
I will be upfront and say that I am prejudiced against space-themed games. Brent knows that I almost always don't like space-themed games. But on that same note, I really do like this game. I think it's interesting. I like being able to figure out how to make the deck work, and how to play which cards when. I actually really like playing the dark side. I play a Sith deck generally. And yeah, it's a game I actually really do enjoy.
Yeah. So just quickly, the way the game works is it's asymmetrical. You've got two different sides, the light side and the dark side. You could probably guess. And the dark side has a little Death Star token, and they're trying to get that to tick up to 12. So every turn of theirs, it ticks one space. So in 12 turns, if the light side doesn't win, the dark side will win. But there's ways. There's a force struggle, and if the dark side has the force in their favor, then they'll tick up two on their turn. And sometimes, when you blow up objectives of the other team, then it ticks up more. So there's different ways to get that dial to tick up. Meanwhile, the light side is just trying to blow up three objectives of the dark sides, and then they win the game. So each player has a deck of 50 cards and then a deck of 10 objectives. So you shuffle up those objectives, you lay out three of them, and that's kind of there. They have health, and they have bonus abilities, and they give you your resources. So kind of Magic the Gathering-like. And then you play cards, and you go back and forth, and you have these resources. I think what I like about it is you kind of just start with your resources, and you have to add some more, but you get things back each turn. So there's not really a build-up. You're just kind of drawing cards. I love that you draw up to six, so it kind of benefits you to play as many cards as you can. And then kind of the key part of this game are these edge battles. So whenever you decide to attack something now, each turn you can attack up to three different things because you attack those objectives, and you can attack each one once. And so the order that you pick to have your units attack, you can have multiple attack one, is really important. But anyway, then you go to this edge battle. Every card has these little force icons in the corner, and they're going to add to your edge battle. And you start dropping those cards face down one at a time, back and forth, till both players pass. And then you reveal, and whoever has the most wins that edge battle. That means you get to attack first, and you activate certain icons. Each card can either damage the objective you attacked, damage the other units that are defending or attacking, or they can focus them, which is essentially tap or exert them or whatever, so they can't do their damage. And those edge battles are really exciting. There's fate cards that just add to that, but I feel like every time I play this game, even when it's like a quote-unquote blowout, like one team gets ahead, there's still that chance. It's like there's that last hope for the other team. We just played one the other night, and it was Sith versus Jedi. And it just felt like a Sith-Jedi battle. Kathy was playing the Sith, and you would just put those units out and say, okay, I'm here, I own everything, come after me. Very control-oriented, and I was dropping Jedi trying to manipulate and come up with sneaky ways and ways to double attack and be really powerful. But every time I dropped like a killer combo, Kathy had a card to just negate it. She forced lightning Luke, and he was dead, and just whatever other negations she could do. What was the one card you cast there? Deal damage to everybody?
Deal two damage to every character not committed to the Force.
Yeah, certain cards can be committed to the Force. Actually, any unit can be committed to the Force. It's more helping with Force objects than actually, like, having the Force. And Kathy dropped this card, and it just decimated my units. And then she Force-choked Yoda to add insult to injury. but it was just, it was cool. It was just that real struggle. Like, she was in control the whole time, but could I tip that scale? Could I tip that scale? The answer was no, but it was really fun. And there's lots of thematic decks. There's vehicle decks with the rebels and when the Imperials, they can just battle each other out that way. And then there's the smugglers and the scum and villainy for the other side. And so they kind of have their own tricks for different things they could do. But a really great game. If you haven't tried it out and you like card games, two-player card games, it's really fun. It's really thematic. It's designed by Eric Lang, who's really a board game designer, so I think it appeals in that board game sense. It's really one of the more strategic card games that I've played, these two-player battle. There's a lot of elements to it, which I think turns some people off because it's complex. But once you dig into it, it's really fun. I think it can be played casual. I know the tournament scene, there's some people who are totally into it and some people just can't stand it, but I suggest it as just a casual game for you and a friend. And you can jump in pretty easy. You can buy that core set, you know, kind of two if you're a completionist, but you could get by with one, and then there's a set that came out second that will give you the Scum and Villainy and the Smuggler and Spy cards. And if you just had that, that'd be a great pool to pull from. The decks are easy to make because you put six cards in at a time. And again, something that tournament people have been frustrated with, but it makes it easy to make a deck. And you could just throw all your favorites in and battle it out. And it's super fun. It always comes down to the wire. And the mechanics are really tight. They're really fun. People complain a little bit about the theme. What do you think about a Rancor fighting X-Wing?
It doesn't bother me.
That's a little bit strange to people, but I agree. There could be some reason that it needs to be done. And so, anyway, that's Star Wars LCG. Check it out. Any last words about Star Wars LCG, Kat?
Nope.
All right. Awesome. We're going to move in now to some other reviews. These are reviews that we pre-recorded with Brian and Larry and myself playing some of the games. So we'll go to those now. Hello, everybody. This is the Brent, and we just finished playing a game of Goa. So it's a classic Euro game here by Rüdiger Dorn, published by Z-Man Games, kind of a Euro classic. And so I am playing with Brian.
Yeah, hi. it's a different introduction than normal. Yeah, this is Brian Raditz, the typical co-host.
And also playing with us is Larry Plano.
Guest for the night.
Dracula, whatever.
Extraordinaire.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so we just finished playing Goa. So Goa is an auction, I guess, tile game, although the tile is not really like tile placement. So it's an auction tile game mixed with like an action selection upgrading game. And it seemed like upgrading is the name of the game. That's how you score a lot of your points from upgrading tiles. The theme is you are on an expedition to colonize new territories, you know, gain money, ship goods, and collect resources. Carrots, peas. What are these?
There's no carrots. There's cinnamon sticks.
Cocoa.
The peas are peppers.
I don't know. Anyway, but popcorn. So it's hard to tell what they actually are. But there's these different resources. So yeah, that's the game. So what'd you guys think?
Yeah, I really liked it. It's right up my alley for like a dry Euro game. It was a very good first play. Definitely one
second
that,
play.
Well, we didn't play the first time the right way at all. So this one was definitely the first actual play. Definitely deserves a few more before it's like a definitive, you know, lock in my top whatever for board games. But it was a really enjoyable play, and I want to play it again.
Two quick corrections, Brant. The name of the game is Goa.
What did I say?
You said the name of the game was tile placement.
Oh, sorry, yes.
And the theme is non-existent. I know, you know, we're trying to say it's, you know, settling a new world and colonizing, but really it could have been completely abstract, and I think the game would have still felt exactly the way it feels for me. From that perspective, I think the game plays great. I like it. I like the decisions of where you place your train, so to speak, of how to bid on your tiles. It's not as obvious as you would first think of what tiles would be available. And I like the your own personal tableau of technology upgrades and actions. I just think the theme is, as Brian said, dry Euro.
Yeah, I liked it too. The lack of theme, you know, it's so sound mechanically, it didn't bother me. I think I like games for their mechanics as well as their theme, although anytime a game has theme, it's just that much more exciting to me. One thing I didn't enjoy so much was these guys both kind of, you know, went down the track of upgrading to colonize, and I said, okay, that's it, I'm not going to do that, and I tried to go the other way, and it didn't seem to work for me. I always felt the card short, And sometimes with three, I felt like I was an odd man out in the auctioning. It's a very interesting auction mechanic. I like it. I have no idea if that's what ended up... I end up in last place. Sorry, that's probably key to mention. And I don't know if it was just kind of three-player-isms or if it was my own poor play. But it wasn't that bad. It was pretty close. It was 42 for Larry, 41 for Brian, 32 for me. So, I mean, yeah. In terms of point scoring, it wasn't that bad. But
I mean, it was funny because you were trying to do something different than us. But it almost ended up being, like, going against the grain, like, the way it was kind of working out.
Mm.
Where you were fighting it the whole game, and eventually, like, I guess that's kind of hedging your bets. Like, if you're doing better initially, and you're kind of, like, we're scaling up maybe faster based on the other things that we're able to do, getting more resources, that sort of stuff. But it was good that, you know, at least you tried something different. Being in, like, the last position initially, it's... Yeah, the auction is definitely a unique part of it, and that one's tough to, like, really figure out what, like, the value is going into that sort of bidding process. And I think that's where another play would help, especially with people that know... Like, I'd want to play it a second time with people that know how to do it, or teach the game to people so I could play it with them for their second play so they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I would agree. This game... I think you do considerably better with a second play because you understand what tiles are going to come out, where some victory point opportunities are, and where some wasted tiles might be earlier in the game that you don't need later. And, you know, you touched on something interesting. I think this might be best played with four. I think because it opens this board up more as far as how far the progression goes, and four might avoid that us changing money back and forth through the bidding. The one thing I don't know if Brant said that's interesting about the auction is when you auction someone else's tile, you pay them the money. So money does sometimes transfer back and forth between players.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is you only get one round of auctioning per card, which is somewhat unique. Many auction games, you keep going till people pass.
Right.
So that I like that aspect of it. But I feel like this is a four-player game in its best play mode.
Yeah, some people argue best two-player, actually. I've heard that a lot of people play a two-player a lot. So there's just the straight back and forth. Do I give you my money, or do I spend it myself? You know, I know who I'm giving it to, as opposed to, like you're saying, with three-player, it's like, I'm giving it to him, that's now got an advantage over both of us.
You know, in a two-player, it's almost like you don't even need an auction, almost, because they're going to have... You know, I'm going to give money to Brian, and then next turn, Brian has more money than me, he's going to give it back to me. So it almost becomes a game
where
you
pay less. That's where you pay less.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But that's where you'd need to play it a lot with that, like with that person. So it's like it becomes like chess, where it's very direct, and it's like, you know, you're playing at an equal level.
Right. Well, and you almost never need to do. You never need to have a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? That seems interesting.
All right. So answer me this. So people out there are probably listening, and they haven't ever heard of Goa. So if you like blank, then you'll like Goa.
That's not fair.
Wow.
What do you think it's like?
I mean, we just played... what was that one we just played? The Golden Ages.
Yep.
And I kind of got a similar vibe. I might have liked this with, like, one play a little bit more than that. But I wonder if that was just because of the player count. I think I gravitate a little more towards the, like, higher number of players. But... It felt like that sort of... It almost felt like a Civ sort of style of progression track. I mean, it's really just advancing different actions and such.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that I can answer that question. I can't think of any game that this... I would say if you like any game out there that has multiple mechanics, which I like a lot of games that have varying mechanics, this has a mechanic of... where you place your piece for an auction, the auction itself, the action taking, and then the actual technology build. So again, close to a Civ, but I can't really point to any game that's quite like this, but it's a game of multiple mechanics. So
yeah, it reminded me of two games. One is Power Grid for the auctioning. This is auctioning without the heavy numerical management of Power Grid. That has that. And then the second one reminded me of Castles of Burgundy, where you're upgrading, you're gaining things as you go. It has more of a board layout upgrade system. Surprisingly, Castles of Burgundy, which is also well known for not having theme, has more theme than this game, in that you're actually spreading tiles out to build a land and build a countryside. But I thought those were two there. In terms of newer games where you have upgrade, you know, I tend to think more of like 4X types games where you upgrade your technology, but this is nothing like a 4X, so. No.
Or maybe like a dry, like Five Tribes or something like that. Would that be a good comparison?
This doesn't have the Mancala, which right, is the big part of Five Tribes.
I guess for like determining turn order, like you have to know the value of different things. I think that's the thing, like the end game.
Bidding, yeah.
You're trying to determine what you're spending money on. Either spend like either giving it to the bank or giving it to another player. You're still trying to figure out where is my money best spent to gain victory points. And the victory points in this game were a little more tight than some other Euros. It's not just throwing points at you. It's like 42 isn't like a huge number based on what right. you can get from your player board. So it felt a little more tight, and like I'm sure there were a lot of decisions just based in the auction that would have been different with a second play.
Yeah,
and really it's not a long game. I'd say it's medium, but when you think of what you're capable of doing, it's almost a short game. You only play 8 rounds of 3 actions a round, not counting your bonus action. So if, as you look at your player board, 24 actions doesn't get you far.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I guess if that it's basically, there are the 8 rounds, like Larry was saying. At the beginning of each round, you're auctioning for a new tile or whatnot. Like, each person is going to basically put their token on a tile on the board. And it's going to go around, you're going to be auctioning for each of those, like, bidding on each of those tiles, like, just a one time around for bidding. So, like, each person says a set number till the last person determines if they want it or not, or, like, gives it to the other person. So once you finish with all those tiles, you get those tiles to your board, your tableau, and then you've got typically 3 different actions based on your action track that is, like, you've got 2 boards in the game. One's your, like, tableau with all your, like, plantations and that sort of stuff, and one's your action track. So those 3 actions are kind of coming off of how far you've progressed on your action track, and you're trying to manipulate your other player board to really utilize your resources and gain victory points that way.
All right, so that's Goa, Z-Man Games, Rutger Dorn. 3 thumbs up?
I definitely give it a thumbs up.
Like, you personally give it 3 thumbs?
Or are you trying to use our thumbs?
How many thumbs you guys want? No, I'm saying we're all giving it a thumbs up, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Awesome. So check it out. Thanks. All right. Howdy, everybody. We are here. We just finished playing a game of Above and Below. This is from Red Raven Games and Ryan Lockett, who is Red Raven Games. He does the game. He does the artwork, he's the publisher, everything. So we just played this. It's a light worker placement storytelling game. The theme is your village was ransacked by barbarians and you ran off and you're starting a new village and there's some caves you can explore and you have different villagers and you can purchase new workers and you can go explore the caves and you can build buildings and gather resources and score points at the end. So I am here with Brian.
Yep, back again for the second game of the evening.
And Larry.
Hello again.
And with us is Larry's son, Luke.
Hello.
So, what'd you guys think of Above and Below?
Yeah, no, I really liked it. It wasn't as deep as, or like as much of a Euro as like Goa or something like that. Like, it was a little bit more of a simple, you know, worker placement sort of game, but it was fun for what it was.
Yeah, I think unlike Goa, this game was more theme oriented than strategic. It's a lot of storytelling when you go adventuring, and you know, you could choose the dark path, the good path, as far as, you know, your choices when you're adventuring.
Which one did you pick, Larry?
Dark path.
Oh, okay.
I mean, doesn't that what Dracula does? Dark path.
Yeah.
But no, truly, that's one of the few games I play that, you know, I'm not worried so much about, you know, min-maxing victory points and that kind of stuff. It's just fun to do. I've played it 4 times now, and I think every time I've done something a little differently with what I've done in the game, and I've enjoyed it.
I liked it because the exploring was fun, and I think that'd be a nice way to go, exploring.
Yeah, yeah. I liked it, too. I think it's a more of a family weight game. It's not a like a light family game. It's kind of a heavy family game in that sense, but really good to play with kids or a family. And it's got the storytelling element. The stories are really neat. They're not too long, but they provide enough when you go exploring. So definitely, I feel like, you know, going exploring was really the fun part. You have this book and you read a little paragraph, and then people have to make choices and they can roll some dice to see what happens with the choices. And that was neat. I did go the exploring route, and that definitely paid off.
Yeah.
I had a lot of points and won. So, which is, it's good. I mean, you know, the point of that game is to crack open that book and read those stories. So, you know, if they're going to favor that, it kind of makes sense. It seemed
I think
like
there's like 200 paragraphs in the book.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So you're gonna have to play a lot of times to hit all of them.
Yeah.
Hopefully it does well, just on the, you know, the sales side, because it would be nice to see, like, you know, for him, like, I'd want to see him explore this idea a little bit more. Yeah, just keep going with it and keep expanding upon the base game, because I think there was some like similar, like there was some repetition in like the stories, like you kind of saw like a similar theme in most of those. I'd like to have it, like, you know, veer off a little bit more. So, but it was fun. I mean, it still got enough to, like you said, you played it four times, and I'd play it a few more. I don't know if it would be like in the double digits before it got old, but, you know, with some more variety, it'd be really cool.
Awesome. I think that's pretty much it for Above and Below. Red Raven Games, Ryan Lockett. Larry, got something else?
I was going to say, stay tuned for our next play.
All right. Nice. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Luke.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Alrighty, last up here, we're going to talk about some new releases at the store. Like I said, you can always log on to our Facebook or our website, www.timemachineportal.com, and look for the most up-to-date, the things that are that will probably be out by the time this posts already, but here's some new releases in the store right now. Blood Rage, the Eric Lang highly acclaimed game, is here. Awesome miniatures, awesome battles of Vikings and Valhalla. Really fun game. Warhammer Quest, the adventure card game, is out. I've heard a lot of good things about that. That's Fantasy Flight Games, as well as Runebound 3rd Edition. I played 1st Edition Runebound. I never played the 2nd Edition, so here's the 3rd Edition one. Saw that at Gen Con. Looks exciting. Terra, which is kind of a party game a la Wits and Wagers, where you don't have to know everything. You just have to know certain things about the timeline of the Earth, about geography and different things. They'll ask you questions, and you have to know, like, where is Mount Vesuvius? And people put tokens there, and then you can put adjacent, you score points if you think you're right, or how tall is it, or different things like that. So it looks like an interesting game. Wrath of Dragons is a really neat game from Catalyst Games that we got to demo at Gen Con. Really neat, kind of Euro-style game, but it has dragons. Dragon meeples. You like dragon meeples, Kat?
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
What do you think about these other games I mentioned?
That's all right.
Have you ever heard of them?
Yes, I've heard of them.
Oh, she's heard of some of them. Nice. Star Wars Armada, that miniatures battle game. This is the kind of counterpoint to X-Wing. Wave 2 is in, which means you can now get yourself an Imperial class Star Destroyer. Not the Victory class, not the other ones. This is the full thing, the Imperial class Star Destroyer. What do you think, Kath? Can I get Imperial class Star Destroyer to put on my desk?
Knock yourself out.
That thing just looks cool. What a great looking model. Some smaller games here, Melee, Battle Cap, Vikings. Those are some neat little games that I've heard about. So, those are just some of the games that are in the store right now. As always, new things are always coming in, Wednesdays, Fridays, other days. So go on to that Facebook page and you can check out or ask a question if something you're looking for that you need. Games that we are looking forward to that I can't wait for these to come out. I don't have dates on them yet, but these are really exciting ones. One is Shakespeare by Yastari Games. This is a really neat game. It's a Euro-style game where you are putting on a play. So you are putting on a Shakespearean play, and you have to hire the actors and build the set and design the acts and the costumes and hire extra people to help you with it. And you hire everybody, but in typical Shakespearean play fashion, you don't pay everybody till the show is over. until the show's on. And so you have to make sure you're going to make enough money so that people don't get mad at you in the end when there isn't enough money. So it's kind of got that tension. So I've heard lots of good things. I love Shakespeare. So this is highly appealing to me. What do you think about Shakespeare, Kat? Does that sound interesting?
It definitely sounds interesting. I'm interested to find out how much the theme is utilized in the mechanics of the game, like whether it feels like Shakespeare is actually involved or I'm just moving pieces around.
Yeah. From what I've heard, the theme is pretty strong. The one interesting part is you're hiring actors, but you're actually hiring characters from Shakespearean plays. But I think that's just more to bring the theme out. It's more interesting than hiring John Smith, you know, is hiring Romeo. Like, you hire him to be in your play, so that's kind of interesting. So you're not putting on specific Shakespearean shows, but just kind of that overall piece. And then the other game that's coming out is they made a new edition of Through the Ages. This is a Vlada Chvátal classic Czech games edition, and it's a new journey through the ages or something like that it's called. This is a game that we've played a ton. We used to play online, just the two of us, but we'd have it on the computer because it could control a lot of that stuff. So they've streamlined it. Have you seen some of the pictures and the graphics from this version of the game?
I have seen it a little bit. It definitely looked really cool. I remember loving this game, so I'm definitely interested in playing the updated version.
Yeah. They've updated the art and all sorts of things, which is definitely one of the complaints for the old game. The components are nicer. And they've streamlined a lot of the things. I know the war mechanic, the playing those war cards and the military was like a big buildup, which is something that he originally wanted, but it kind of became a big arms race without a lot happening, or one side was clearly stronger than the other. So they streamlined some of that and changed some of the things. We'll have to see. Probably playing it in person is 3 hours.
Yeah.
And so we'll have to see if it's quicker, but... sounds really exciting. So that's Through the Ages, the new edition from Czech Games Edition. All right, that's it. That is Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 10 in the books. What'd you think, Kat? Did you have fun?
It was fun.
Nice. So, that is our episode number 10. This is kind of our pre-holidays, pre-Christmas edition here. So Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays. Hope all that goes well. Hope you have a great new year. Hopefully we'll get another one recorded here before that. But if not, I just want to say that to you and your family and your friends and everybody. That's what I have to say about that. Anything else, Kath? Last words, last things? Things you want us to know about?
Happy holidays.
Nice. Thanks, everybody. So, this has been your host, The Brant, and with me...
Kathy.
Woohoo! And as always, we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of The Time Machine / The Portal, which is a store located at 60 and 71 Hilliard Street. For more information, please log on to www.timemachineportal.com or email us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. As always, thanks for listening.